Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today I have Brian Prince. Brian is a regional CTO for DPE, how's that for acronyms, from Microsoft, based in the United States, and we'll ask him what those initials mean. His bio says he gets super excited whenever he talks about technology, especially cloud computing, patterns, and practices. His job is to help customers strategically leverage technology and help them bring their architecture to a super level. Brian is the co-author of Azure in Action, published by Manning Press. Brian, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Jesse?
I am doing terrific. I am incredibly pleased to finally have you on the show. I've been chatting with you and waving to you at CodeMashes et al., and which you are, am I right, a co-founder of CodeMash?
I am a co-founder, and we're coming into our ninth year.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it's I can't believe it. Yeah.
Well, CodeMash is one of my absolute favorite regional conferences, and a lot of that has to do with the quality of the organizers and the organization, and a lot of it has to do with the people it attracts, and I don't, there's just something very special that happens at CodeMash.
Yeah, I don't know how we lucked into that magic, but there is, you know, part of it I think is the facility. It's not a generic conference center that feels like an airport or a hospital. It's got this cool, you know, at the Kalahari, it's got the cool, you know, couches everywhere and stuff like that. So it's got a real kind of community feel to begin with.
Yes. So yes. There are a lot of places for people to congregate in small numbers and in medium numbers. It has good conference rooms. I don't actually take advantage of the water park, but I know a lot of people really love that. And every year when we leave, the cheerleaders arrive, which is just too much.
Yeah. It's because of them that our contract says no glitter is allowed on campus because it's hard to get out of the carpets.
Yes, I like that. Now, what does it mean that you are a CTO? I assume that's not a chief technology officer. What does it mean that you're a CTO?
Yeah, that's what it means. So for USDPE, our division, our developer and platform evangelism, right? That's a U.S. Mm-hmm. wide organization. There's probably 350 people in that org. We're broken into three pieces, West, Central, and East regions. And so I'm the chief technical nerd for Central region.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah, I was the chief technical evangelist for a couple years for Azure. And it's basically that. But instead of U.S. wide, it's just Central. Mm-hmm. And instead of just Azure, it's all of the priorities. Windows 8, Windows Phone 8, Windows Server, Windows Azure, Visual Studio and Tools, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a lot of fun.
It sounds like a huge amount of work.
It's, you know, the challenge is it's brand new role. And so you get to kind of sketch out what you think the job should be and do it and hope a year from now, everyone agrees I did the right things.
Now, let me start by putting you on the spot a little bit. About a year ago, when I was talking to folks in DPE, and when I worked at Microsoft, there was a fairly sharp distinction drawn between corporate, the guys who were in Redmond, and field, the guys who were out in the country.
Yeah.
And about a year ago, the field DPE guys had these amazing, I don't know if quota is the right word, but goals for applications in the store. Mm-hmm. Is that still a huge priority? Is that, I guess, pressure still there on the field guys?
Yeah, you know, that's our scorecard. And corporate isn't as scorecard and commitment driven as the field is. And just to be clear, you know, evangelists, we're basically engineers who work for marketing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, no matter what type of evangelist you are, it always comes down to driving passion and adoption, getting people excited about our platform and getting them to use it. And in years past, 5 years ago, the strategy was let's go help build the .NET community and get people interested in .NET and get them start using the .NET. And we did that. And there's millions of .NET developers now. Very good ecosystem. And now with Windows 8, you know, the challenge is getting people to think about writing apps instead of applications. We want them to keep writing applications, but we want to help teach them and get them using and building apps for Windows 8 and Windows Phone and Windows Azure. So that's how we measure that, is the number of apps in the store.
So let me take you in a slightly different direction and focus in on Azure, because I have been exposed to Azure a lot. I certainly know what it is, and you can't go to a Microsoft conference and not see a very large presence around Azure, mm-hmm. and yet it hasn't made its way into my stack of things I use on a regular basis. And I suspect that's about to change in my life and for a lot of folks. And so maybe we could talk a little bit about the kinds of ways that people are beginning to use Azure, and that Azure makes sense for developers who are building both apps and applications.
Yeah, sure. So you're right. Shortly, you know, our dream, I guess, is to make Azure so easy to use that it's easier to use than your own infrastructure, that it's just seamless, friction-free. You know, we have a lot of stuff coming to make that. I mean, the tools built into Visual Studio are one way of doing that. But also for our website platform, you know, being able to deploy through Git repos or GitHub or FTP or however you want to deploy, we make that easy. So that's one thing. And our goal isn't to just build a cloud. There, almost every other vendor out there is just a cloud vendor. We really have this dream of this consistent platform spanning from mobile devices like phones and tablets to laptops and desktops to servers, to hosted servers and to cloud servers. And especially on the server side of things, making that cloud OS ubiquitous. So whether I, you know, in the very near future, being able to deploy locally to my own data center, to the cloud, will almost be the same thing. And that apps will be able to expand and contract across those boundaries. So maybe I run them locally, and that 1 week a year where that app gets really busy because it's HR review season, it just naturally expands to start using Azure to fill the needs that it has. So that's our dream is to make, and you can see that now with the Azure Pack. If you're a Hyper-V environment, you can get something called the Azure Pack. It's a preview now. And the UI looks just like the Windows Azure portal. You can deploy VMs in basically the same way. And it's a very clear precursor to where we want to go to make that kind of a unified platform.
All right, let me ask you a couple of fundamental and simple questions. Mm-hmm. I'm building a course for Pluralsight on building a website for, uh-huh. and this course is targeted at people who don't have any web experience. So we're going to possibly use MVC. We're certainly going to use Bootstrap and put together a site and have a web service, either web API or service stack. And at some point in this course, I'm going to get to deployment. Is there an easy story, a straightforward story of deploying that to Azure that makes sense for a small budget site?
Yeah. So I would recommend they use websites, which is one of the three ways to run code in Azure. It's the easiest way. When all you need is a web server, just give me an IIS container. That's the best way to go, because you're not managing servers or any, no patch levels, nothing. I just need a place to run my website. And you can deploy to, and so it's, to a degree, it's free. You get an Azure subscription. You'll get $200 for free for your first 30 days as part of the trial, but ongoing, you get 10 websites for free for life.
Wow.
And that includes a certain amount of CPU and RAM and storage for free. You know, if you exceed that, we either turn your website off for the month, or you can pay to go beyond that. That's how I run my blog, actually, is on WordPress, on websites in the free version. Now, the really free version, you can't use a custom domain name. So it's really meant for hobbyists and learning and simple things like that. If you want to go to domain name and a few other features, you kind of move up to the shared mode, mm-hmm. where you're going to have to pay a little bit to get those features. But it is definitely a cheap/free approach.
And am I right that some of this that you might otherwise pay for, you can also get for free if you have an MSDN account?
Yeah, if you have MSDN, then you're golden, because then you can get anywhere, depending on the level of MSDN you have, anywhere from $50 to $150 credit per month. And you don't have to have a credit card on file either, which is really great. And that's cool, because the old way to do it was you got 5 hours of this and 10 gigs of that and 10 minutes of this. It was really complicated service by service. And now we just say, look, you get $200, you got $150. Go each month, go burn it the way you want to burn it. We don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as long as it's for dev test, obviously, because it's MSDN. And so you can just go and play. And so, so many people ask me, do you think this will work in Azure? And we'll talk about it. But I said, at the end of the day, just go do it. you get free hours, you get free time. Just go try it.
Let me ask you about a service that I saw a hint of when it was being developed, which is Azure Mobile Web Services.
Uh-huh.
And one of the promises of that was that it was going to make working with notification easier.
Yes.
With notifying out through Windows Phone.
Mm-hmm.
What's the status with that? Is that a real product now? Is that rolled out?
Yes. So that family of services is now called Windows Azure Mobile Services. It's a collection of services to make it easy to build a backend for a mobile app without having to be a backend developer. One of those is the Notification Hub. And what that does is, let's say you have, and the mobiles, all the mobile services are designed to be very cross-platform. So there are SDKs and tools for Windows Phone 8, Windows 8, I think we have Windows Phone 7, iOS, Android, and HTML5 clients. So you can really build one backend to rule them all. With the Notification Hub, you're going to register your apps through the hub, and the hub is going to connect to the different notification engines that each platform has, right? So APNS for iOS, the Windows Notification Service for Windows, etc. And then typically it's the backend that's pushing notifications. That backend only has to talk to the Notification Hub. The Notification Hub knows all of the subscriptions. Bob is on an iPhone, Jesse is on a Windows phone, Brian's on a Windows phone. And the Notification Hub then routes the push notification through the right network with the right APIs and all of that. So you're taking a dependency on one API instead of four or five different ones.
And how complex or difficult is that to set up?
For basic uses, like there's a news alert, push out a notification to everyone, very easy. But there's advanced use cases where you can group subscriptions together. So all of the Massachusetts users could be under one topic, one subscription, mm-hmm. and you push a notification to only the Massachusetts people, again, regardless of the platform they're on. So you can, that gives you kind of a meta ability that the underlying platforms don't support, where I can slice and dice which users I'm pushing to.
Okay. Let me ask you about some other issues that have come up in my own programming, and maybe through them we can get at some of the rest of Azure, mm-hmm. which is I've been looking long and hard at building web services, both with web API and with Service Stack. Does Azure support both, and would that be a good platform for me to use for my web service?
So I'm not super familiar with Service Stack, but web API runs out of the box super clean on any of the parts of Windows Azure that you want to run it on. You know, we have the VMs, the cloud services, and then the websites I was talking about earlier. If it runs on IIS, it'll run in Azure.
And let's run through those three parts and what they are and how they're distinguished.
Yeah, so we'll start with the easiest one, which is the websites, which we've already talked about. I just need a web server container to run my code in. That's IIS, easy to use. And you have very little control over the infrastructure, right? Because at that point, I don't care. I just need a web server. It scales, it load balances, it does all of that. The other end of the spectrum is virtual machines. That's where you have full control. You can take a virtual machine locally, upload it, and run it in the cloud for a month, and then take it back down. So they're based on VHD, so it's an open standard that's compatible. We have a library of base images, so you don't have to build an image from scratch if you don't want to. We support Windows and Linux operating systems and really support. If you call up with a Linux issue, there's an actual Linux guy on the phone, not just a Windows guy who read, you know, Linux in 21 days.
Now, let's not pick on the 21 days books, but okay.
Yeah, no disrespect. But, you know, someone who has a deep knowledge of that platform.
Yep.
And so you have full control over VMs. So we manage the physical part of that stack, the physical networks, the load balancers, the physical CPUs involved. We deal with hardware failovers and all that, but you own all of the software and virtual stack. So you own that virtual machine, what version and what patch level it has. You still have to tuck in it at night. You still have to back it up when you want to. You have full and complete control. And that's a very easy way to move into the cloud if you have existing infrastructure. We call it lifting and shifting, right? Just pick it up and move it to the cloud and it'll work. The middle is platform as a service. Some people call it PaaS. our brand for that is called cloud services. And that's when I'm going to give you, if you've used Java and jar files, it's a lot like that. I take my application and they can have multiple different pieces. Think of an enterprise app that's N tier and it's got a web front end and a couple back end pieces and all of that. I package those pieces up and I describe the environment that code should run in. Mm-hmm. I want this to run on four servers that are two cores each, and they should be wired up this way network-wise with these firewall settings. It's all configuration. And then the Azure App Fabric, which is like the Skynet entity that manages the cloud, takes your package when you want to deploy it and turns all those servers on and deploys everything. And it manages the virtual and physical infrastructure, and you're just managing your code. The great thing is that I have an escape hatch. I can configure those servers I'm running on if I need to. Let's say there's a COM component I need. I can deploy that and register it through script. So the platform as a service can do everything the VMs can do. You just have to automate the process versus doing it by hand.
I see.
Yeah.
So let's go back to websites, which is the least expensive introductory part, mm-hmm. if I understand you. Mm-hmm. And obviously you can use that to host your own website, your own blog, and so forth. But you can also use this to host a full website. And can you also use this to host a database-driven website?
So the answer is yes. I can move into dedicated mode on those servers where those servers are only running my websites. I can scale it up to, I forget the maximum number, but we're talking about, 15, 20 servers, which most web applications would be fine with that amount.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a dynamic scale. So I can scale up for a busy weekend and scale back down. I can move from shared to dedicated and back to shared all I want. You pay by the hour that you use it. For the database, because it's just a web server, you can't install SQL Server there. But we have MySQL for free that you can use. We have SQL Database that you can use. So if you want to use SQL, you're used to using SQL Server. SQL Database is in the cloud. You say, give me a database. We give you a connection string and you're off and running. Some people use, if your data needs aren't very complex, they use very lightweight, kind of in-memory databases that a web server might use, like an embedded database. And then on mobile services, there's mobile data there where we manage the database infrastructure for you. It's still your database. You're running it in SQL Database, but you give it an object graph and it creates the tables and all of that. And then what it does is it creates a REST API facade over your data with CRUD services, with a CRUD API, a create, read, update, and delete. And then your app just consumes that REST API. And so you're completely separated from your data that way if you'd like.
This is, I think I'm really taken aback by how much this has grown in a relatively short amount of time.
Yeah, you would not believe. I think we shipped, in the past 12 months, we've shipped over 110 features. When you think of traditional enterprise software, think of SQL Server that ships once every 3 years, or on a 2-year, 4-year cycle. Windows used to ship every 3 years. You knew when the wave was coming, you could prepare for it. Now it's a dynamic platform, and we're adding features all the time, and they're almost always all additive in nature. A new feature popped up. It doesn't change what you're doing. It just gives you something new to do if you want. I think maybe one was a backwards compatibility issue type thing, but they're all forward going type of concerns. So you don't have to worry. But people who looked at Azure a year ago and then look at it today, they're just blown away about how fast the team is moving.
And do we put this at Scott Guthrie's feet? Is he the driving force?
Well, he's definitely helped accelerate it. I'll tell you that. He's brought in a lot of vision. He's done a lot to make it easier to work with. The first, it's the old, Microsoft version 1.2.3 thing. The original releases of Azure were built for cloud engineers by cloud engineers. I loved it because I understood it. But there was definitely some bit fiddling that had to go on because it was an early kind of V1.0 environment. When Scott came on, he focused a lot on dev tools, simplicity, opening up the APIs. And if you compare the old portal to the latest portal, it's a lot easier to use. It's a lot easier to sign up. And the famous story that he did to get people to focus on that, because remember, the engineers building the product, they don't use it like a normal customer. They had subscriptions mostly by adding their name into a database. And so when he first started, he brought them all down. I think it was down to Bellevue. So down to a conference room in a hotel somewhere, gave them each a credit card and said, all right, go sign up for your own product and see what it's like. You know, and a lot of them failed in doing that. A lot of them took them a half an hour to an hour to do it. And that's when he brought the focus to making it easy on the developer and on the IT pro to kind of use it day in and day out. So, yeah, I think a lot of it is his vision.
Let me take you in a slightly different direction. Who is the competition for Windows Azure?
Well, it's a good question. If you think cloud scenario, then our biggest competition is probably Amazon. You know, they were in the market, at least with VMs, very early. They built a big customer base. But I talked to a lot of Amazon customers that are perfectly willing and happy to jump because they want to move to VM formats that are standardized, that are open. You know, we've made a lot of commitments to match their pricing, so you don't have to worry about, you know, a price war hurting your engineering decisions that way. There are some other cloud vendors. Most of them are Amazon clones, and they do the VM, the infrastructure as a service, pretty well. We have a very compelling offering on that side, and we've done a lot of innovation on the rest of the cloud, these other enrichment services and data services and platform as a service services. I think that's where most of our innovation is. But when I look at competing with the cloud, our biggest competitor is just traditional data centers. You know, I own that. I can hug it at night. I control it. You know, if I move
it. I have to maintain it. I have to.
Yeah, yeah. I got to water it. I got to do all this stuff.
Right.
But they have this, at least this illusion of control. And sometimes they don't want to let go of that. And so that's probably truly the biggest competitor.
What about, and this may be totally irrelevant, what about the services that offer to provide off-site backup? Are they built on top of Azure, or is that an offering that Azure provides, or how does that work?
Do you mean like a consumer PC backup stuff?
Or yes.
Like, yeah, so you know, we've been mostly talking about the business side of cloud computing. What does a business do? And you know, consumers have a different set of cloud needs and services that they're going to be using. And one of those is PC backup. There are some of those services that are built on Azure. A lot of them are built on Amazon, and we work with them as companies to, you know, tell them a compelling story why they should use Azure. You know, there's a certain fruit-based cloud that's actually built on Azure as well.
Is that right?
Yes, it is.
That's interesting.
Well, people don't believe me, but it's true.
Talk about comparing apples and oranges.
Yes. Yep.
What else should I know about Azure as a developer? Where should I begin my exploration of this as a potential platform for my application?
Well, it depends on the type of developer you are. I mean, the problem with Azure is it's a very broad, broad platform. So if you're managing internal stuff, we have to look at why you might need the cloud. You know, a lot of developers, they're going to keep their apps internal, their data center. They don't need infinite scale. They don't need a lot of those sort of things. But what they do need is better dev test environments. So they could, a lot of people start using the cloud just to provide a richer, more sophisticated dev test environment. You know, the QA environment is usually the worst environment. It usually has the old discarded hardware from production. Doesn't have any parity with production at all. It's a mess. It's hard to run multiple versions. You know, what if you're in the middle of testing V1.5, but you need a hotfix for V1.0? How do I test both of those? In Azure, you just spin up another environment, test it for the afternoon, and shut it all down. You don't have to go and requisition hardware and jump through all the hoops. And so that phrase, the catchword there is infrastructure at the speed of code, where I can spin that up, use it, throw it away when I'm done. There's no bad feelings when you destroy delete a server and move on, right?
That from a QA perspective is extraordinary. My wife does QA and runs into the problem you're talking about all the time, and the ability to be able to spin up a production V-1 or -2, do some work, and then just take it down would be very powerful.
Yeah, it's that's actually the biggest segment of growth for us right now are people coming online for dev test scenarios in a lot of different ways. What if you need to do load testing to your on-premises application. Well, I can generate that load from the cloud, and I can generate it from, you know, 6 or 8 different places around the world if I really need to represent a global footprint.
So let me give you a small example and ask you about this one. I have a friend who's working on an application that amazingly I started 8 years ago, and he's still developing, which is, it's been quite the gig.
And he still talks to you?
And yes. And he's built a tremendous application, but this is for a relatively small business, and they serve it out of a server that's sitting in one of these, you know, locked buildings. Mm-hmm. And they also have another server that sits actually on premise. And so, of course, the connection is very, very quick. Are they going to see, if they move to Azure, are they going to see the same kind of performance? And what's the gating factor there?
So, I mean, whenever you move a server across a network, you're going to gain latency. Is it enough for a human to notice? Probably not. I mean, think about when you go to your webmail and, you know, and that loads up and that sort of thing. You know, what I say is, hey, try it and see. You can do, you know, you can run tests. You can upload that VM and see what happens for sure. You know, we work really hard to run a very high speed, well connected network amongst our data centers and connecting those data centers to the internet. And by well connected, I mean, you know, a lot of people don't think about this, but how your server and the bandwidth you're getting connects to the internet and the major peering points really matters. If you do a trace route from your computer at home and to you know, a big website, you'll see 30, 40 hops easy. And that's because it's going from one router to the next, to the next router, to the next router. Well, if there are major interconnects where almost like a big crossroads on the internet from a networking perspective called peering points. And so the two most commonly known ones are May East and May West, which are on the East Coast, I believe in the New York, New Jersey area, if I remember right. And there's one on the West Coast, I think in the LA area. Connecting your data center directly into that peering point puts you network-wise closer to the user. And so we work really hard on that. We test our network constantly all day to make sure that it's performing very fast. And so based on that, based on known public networks, if you will, so I can't comment on secret government overlord networks. You know, we have the second best connected network on the planet, and people always ask who the first is, and I can't tell you who they are, but they are evil and they eat babies.
And they eat babies.
Yes. They're cannibals, but we work, you know, very hard. If you think of the infrastructure that we've built for Windows over the years, for Xbox, for Live, for Bing, you know, the Windows Update network is leveraged by Azure for some services. And that at some points has a 3 terabit per second backbone, right? So you can transmit the contents of a Blu-ray DVD faster than it takes to put the DVD in the machine.
That is amazing.
Yeah, that'll curl your hair.
That's a great statistic to quote.
I want to play, you know, Xbox across that network because you would have like negative lag. You would be shooting into the future, you know? That would be really cool.
My new favorite joke.
Yeah.
The let's see if I can get it right. Bartender says, "I'm sorry, we don't serve faster than light particles in here." A lepton walks into a bar.
Yeah. I love physics jokes.
So that's Azure at a very high level. I recognize that there's much, much more to say. But your responsibilities now go well beyond Azure. And so where are you spending your time? Is it still mostly with Azure, or is it Windows 8 or Windows Phone or something else?
Well, we call those priorities or platforms. And from a technical perspective, I'm responsible for all of our platforms. So Windows Phone, Windows 8, Windows Server, Windows Azure, and tools are the five big rocks in that bucket. And a big part of my day is inwardly facing, you know, so we have a team of engineers, technology guys and girls. They're all sharp, but our job is to talk to people about code, not necessarily to ship code like our customers do. So how do you keep your skills sharp? You know, with technology moving so fast internally, how do we keep up to date? And so part of my job is to provide ways for them, almost like an internal technical community, to help them stay sharp, stay relevant, stay up to date. That's part of it. Another part is continuing to work with the phrase I believe on my commitments is win big deals, big partners, and big community. So still engage public facing in the community and customers and partners to help our teams that do that day in and day out when they need a little bit extra geek power. And then the third is working with our national and corporate teams to drive, you know, all up strategy around how we do what we do.
Okay, that sounds like three jobs.
That is three jobs, yeah. And they give me the whole day to do it, so that's nice. It comes and goes. And you know, that's what's exciting. We've got an Azure tour going on right now. We fork the content. So we have two-thirds of the events are traditional, lecture with a hands-on lab, kind of feature-centric, technical marketing standard. And the other third are scenario-driven. So instead of talking about the product and making it a product event, it's a skill event. Let's talk about how you deal with dev test issues. We're going to use Studio. We're going to use Azure when we do that, but we're really focusing on those dev test skill sets. And hopefully those will be better attended and people will like them more, and we'll be able to shift more of our resources to doing skill-centric events instead of product-centric events.